We've just been debating debt levels and much higher levels going forward, and how the central banks and governments might try and pay for that or control it. Jim was just making the point that Treasury inflation protected securities pricing in just 0.5% inflation over the next 5 years. What's your view? Is that realistic? Are we going to still see low inflation, or should we be expecting that to increase?
I do think there's a short-term versus long-term dynamic relative to inflation that I think are really important. And, you know, I do find myself in the camp of near-term. I just don't see the inflation, but longer-term, I am respectful of the debt creation and the after effect of that. But what I put on this, that I think when you break down the data, that I think for years people have been talking to me every year, it's the whole story, wages are accelerating, inflation is coming, get ready here, it's coming, and it's just not coming. And you know, I put on these charts, and I presented this on the upper, a bunch of this to the Fed many times. On the upper left, the dynamic around, we are operating the lowest level of volatility of inflation in 100 years. And when you take five-year vol of inflation, five-year vol of growth. And I think there are a couple of structural reasons why inflation is muted and will continue to be muted. One is this incredible shift from the manufacturing economy to a service-oriented economy. And I've shown a bunch of these charts. It's a goods-oriented economy and a manufacturing-oriented economy, for obvious reasons, throws off, you know, what are highly cyclical inflationary give and takes, where you get into, when you have a manufacturing economy, you get into things like transportation and energy and chemicals and logistics. And when you get a goods-oriented economy, you get that driver, that impulse of high inflation that feeds through the system and then leads to a recession. But the fact of the matter is, and I show these regressions on the upper right, when you're in a service-oriented economy, which is 70% of the U.S., it's different in emerging markets, but you don't create that level of inflation. It's why we're running through this extraordinarily stable level of inflation I put on the bottom left. And when you take the developed world that we are evolving from a service, from a manufacturing service-oriented economy, so you don't get this, you know, things like education, healthcare, unless, you know, there's some specific near-term dynamics, you just don't create. You get consistent inflation over time, and that's exactly what we're experiencing. And then I put on the bottom right, the other reason why you don't get this structural inflation is you follow the demographic curve, meaning potential growth stays low, particularly in a levered developed world. And if potential growth stays low, then you don't create those inflationary conditions, and inflation growth and inflation follow the inflationary curve incredibly sincerely. It doesn't mean you can't have an oil shock or you can't have a near-term effect, but you always come back to the regression. So I put on this last page the dynamics. So I just run the regression against demographics. And you look at, there are two parts of the demographic, obviously the aging economy, and the second being what is the most impactful part of your economy, meaning the 20 to 44-year-old population growth. And what it shows you is we are just at a part of the demographic curve that suggests you're just not going to get potential growth, and you don't get inflation, you don't get core PCE growth when you're in this, you know, unless you have some systemic shock. And, you know, we could debate the debt burden, which longer term, but it's just not, you know, people are going to talk about wages accelerating, that'll lead to inflation. It's not true. And anyway, just to finish on the upper right, and I think this, I think one of the speakers in the last session said this, that being said, maybe not to leave my session and go to the next session, but, you know, I do think where we're pricing inflation in the markets today is way too cheap. I mean, I'm sure others buying a lot of break-evens. You know, pricing 50 basis points for five-year break-evens or 90 basis points for 10 years is just not right. I think inflation is stable, certainly for the next year or two. And then I think you're just pricing it too cheap. And then the last thing I will say is, you know, just to put this in perspective, you know, what people say, and we'll talk about some of the near-term dynamics. I think there are some real near-term deflationary dynamics at play that will course its way through the system over the next year. But anyway, I think you're getting paid for it and taking break-even risk, because if you're buying into 50 basis points or 60 basis points in 5 years, you're supposed to take that. Woman's opinion. Anyway, my last point, which I took the headline from what Jay Powell said, and I think the end of your question was how will policy address this, or how will policy affect this? You know, I think this quote from Jay Powell, when he did his Brookings Institute session, which I think is really powerful. He said, globally, the challenge has been inflation below target. And so honestly, it's not a first order concern for us today that too high inflation might be coming our way in the near term. Far from it. One thing I don't worry about is inflation right now, meaning policymakers aren't worried about it, meaning you can keep rates low for a while, meaning you could build debt, you can create what is effectively this modern monetary theory, in which we could debate. And I think the next session, their next speaker is going to talk about this structurally. You could create inflation over the medium term, but like I say, I think near term, it's hard to see it in a significant proportion of the next, certainly next few months or a couple of years.
Thank you very much, Rick. And we'll move to you, Jim. And I just wanted to highlight that we've had, a number of questions coming in from sort of the various people we've had joining from across CBS on this. And a lot really focused on, the local versus the global dynamics of inflation. If we start to see perhaps a more deglobalized world, do we start to see differences in inflation across different regions? And then what are some of the implications for that, if true, for things like different currencies or for even gold? So if you could touch on those topics as well.
Three things that have led to this secular decline in inflation since the beginning of the 1980s. And they were demographics. Generally, we've been an aging population. Well, perhaps that's coming to an end somewhat. You know, we're already seeing longevity in the United States has fallen year after year for the last 3 years. And, you know, so you could argue we're approaching a peak. I don't personally believe that's the case in the medium term, but certainly in some areas of the world, demographics will no longer be the extreme tailwind for lower inflation that we've seen. The other one was around technology. And I still think that's the biggest worry. If I was a worker right now, would be the impact of technology on my wages over the long term. And you've all read The Rise of the Robots and understood that, whereas it was blue collar jobs that were taken away by robotics and machinery, farm jobs, etc. In the next decade, it's going to be our jobs, everyone on this phone, and we are going to see immense wage pressure as a result of that. You know, this won't be as high paying world that we are used to for white collar jobs. So yeah, I don't yet think that inflation is going to be under threat from technology. If anything, there could still be this disinflationary force. But the questions that you're getting through on the line at the moment from people around UBS really around globalization, I guess. And I found it really interesting on the news and the BBC last night. They had a government procurement expert who used to work for this current Conservative government who said they have made mistakes, that they believed in a globalized world. And the reason that we don't have enough PPE, enough equipment for nurses and doctors in the UK right now is because we always believed that we'd be able to get that from China or Turkey or somewhere in a cheap labor world. And I think that what's happened over the past month or so has left people realizing that we need some degree of self-sufficiency within different blocks as well. And for me, it's the globalization piece that puts inflation long-term trends most at risk, because we're already seeing that. We saw that with Donald Trump and the kind of isolationist anti-immigration, anti-NAFTA, all of these trade wars between him and China. We were seeing that early on anyway. Hadn't yet produced any significant upward inflationary pressure, but certainly had the potential to do that. Then we have Brexit and what's going on there. That will almost certainly include some tariff barriers between the UK and the European Union, probably not in goods, but almost certainly in services, which means higher prices. And now we have what may be a very, you know, we may be open for business in Germany, small shops, but when are we going to start flying goods and services around the world again? That could be a year or more away. It may never return to the degree of globalization. And we may start thinking that some degree of self-sufficiency within national boundaries is important. And we know that, for instance, when the UK was self-sufficient in cars, we produced the world's worst cars. I grew up in a household that drove British Leyland cars for my entire childhood, and it was kind of a 1 in 5 probability of it starting properly on a day-to-day basis. They're inferior products. We had high inflation, high wage inflation amongst those industries. And another example is around food. And at the moment, the UK relies heavily on Eastern European workers to pick its food harvest. This year, we don't have Eastern European workers. Next year, but for the reasons of coronavirus, next year we won't have Eastern European workers for reasons of Brexit. And suddenly, I think you'll see a fairly significant increase in food prices around that time. Because let's remember, the impact of globalization has worked two ways. It's not just meant cheap goods from Asia. It's also meant the threat of labor, the threat of developed market factories moving to developing markets. We saw this in Germany after the Berlin Wall came in. We ended up with wage cuts and wage freezes amongst German manufacturers in exchange for BMW or Volkswagen leaving their plants in Stuttgart or Munich rather than moving them into Poland and Romania. And so globalization has worked in both directions, cheap goods, low wages. And if we see globalization under threat, and we certainly are, both from geopolitical reasons and for coronavirus reasons, then for me, that is the biggest risk to inflation going forwards.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliates. The views and opinions expressed in this material by external guest speakers are those of the author, speaker, and are not those of UBS, its subsidiaries, or affiliates. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over the content of this material or any claims, losses, or damages arising from the use or reliance of all or any part thereof. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient, and is published for informational purposes only. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.